Luke 5, verse 1 through 11. One day as Jesus was standing by the Sea of Galilee, the people were crowding around him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. And he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that the nets began to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people." So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him.
The point of the passage that Adam just read for us is that Jesus can help you win. Fishermen who caught more fish than their boats could hold. And then Jesus told them that he was now going to help them catch people. Jesus would later talk with farmers and tell them that they would plant and harvest crops more than their barns could hold. But not corn or wheat or potatoes. He said they would plant kingdom seeds that they would spread everywhere freely, just throwing it out there, and it would transform people at a rate of 30, 60, 100-fold. Jesus then told some investors that he would entrust them with resources. He would give them a lot, and that if they would trust his plan, they could double their initial amount. If he gave them five and they would try, he would double it. If he gave them two and they would try, same deal. The promise was that if they would work with Jesus, they would prosper. So the point of all of these is that Jesus can help people win. He wants us to win. His plan is for people with him to win. And he used stuff from the lives of the people he was talking to that made sense to them to make the point. He took what mattered to these people and he made analogies that they could appreciate. So if Jesus was doing the same kind of thing today for us, he would probably say, "Follow me, and I can turn you into a team of world champions." I mean, we live in Western New York, right? We have seen football championships, lots of them. Never us. Usually Brady, sometimes the Eagles, Giants got a couple, even the Jets won a world championship. We know the joy of being champions, not us, but we've seen others do that. Did you hear about the old guy who requested some Buffalo Bills to serve as pallbearers at his funeral? He said it would be appropriate for them to let him down one last time. We would like to be champions. We would like to be Stanley Cup champions. That would be nice to win the cup. I mean, the Islanders have, the Rangers has, Boston has, Toronto, Edmonton, Montreal. Las Vegas almost won, and they didn't even have a team when I started cheering for the Sabres. Tampa Bay wins all the time. They don't even have ice in Florida. So, if Jesus were to invite us to his goodness, might he not say, "I can make it so that you can sing, 'We are the champions of the world,' with confetti falling all about you?" We would say, "Oh, that sounds good. Who doesn't want that? Yes, please put us on that list." This month is our church's membership month. We are giving you a chance to join our congregation. You can officially identify yourself as part of the Willowbrook Christian Church if you so choose. And I'm telling you that the Bible says Jesus wants the people who make up his church to win. He wants you to win. But before you fill out your membership form, I would just like to spend a couple minutes today talking about what winning looks like. What is Willowbrook for? What are we doing here? How do we know when we're winning? If we fill the 200 seats we have here on a Sunday morning, do we win? If we pay off the mortgage that we have on this building, do we win? When our youth group has kids in every group that the high school has going here, is that a win? When we're hosting lots of groups from the community who are having a positive impact on Victor Farmington? I mean, those are all good. We've taken a shot at doing all those things. Is that success? Is that winning? Is that what Jesus would say makes us champions of the world? Did you hear about the sniper, one of the best marksmen in the army, who was passing through a small town once, and everywhere he looked, there was evidence of the most amazing shooting? On trees, on walls, on fences in this town, there were bullseyes all over, each shot a dead center circle. So the army sniper had to ask, he asked someone in town if he could meet the person responsible for all those shootings, and they said, sure, and they introduced the sniper to the town drunk. The old man, shaky hands, reeked of beer. The sniper was surprised, but he said, yours is the finest marksmanship I have ever seen. You're so good. How do you do it? And the old guy said, nothing to it. He said, I shoot first and then I draw the circles after. It's so easy to hit a target if you can decide what you're shooting at. But for us to succeed, like Jesus says he wants us to succeed, that means that he gets to draw the circle and we need to train our aim there. So how does Jesus define success? What are the targets that he's drawn for us? When the woman at the well said, our ancestors worshiped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place that we must worship is in Jerusalem, Jesus said, woman, believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father, neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. A time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in the Spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is Spirit, Jesus said, and his worshipers must worship in the Spirit and in truth. Do you remember when Jesus finished telling the story about the man who got mugged by the robbers and then ignored by the two religious guys and then helped by a Samaritan passing by? And Jesus said, at the end of his story, he said, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? And the expert in the law that he was talking to said, well, the one who had mercy on him. And Jesus told him, go and do likewise. Do you remember when Jesus was challenged to pick one of God's commandments as the goat, the greatest of all time commandments? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second's like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Worship the Father in spirit and truth. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. When somebody else needs you, go and do likewise, help them. Those two ideas seem pretty big to Jesus. And then there's what he said right at the end before heading out. He said, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. Surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age. Jesus said, baptize and teach people to do life like I've told you to. Loving God, loving others, like Jesus, with Jesus' help, change the world. That's what we're supposed to be doing. So our congregation, like many others, aims at those things, to work together to connect people with Jesus and with each other in meaningful relationships. That's not shooting first and drawing circles. That's letting Jesus set the target. But why does it look like some churches are scoring more bullseyes than other churches? Shouldn't all congregations be made up of people who love God and love others? If, after Peter correctly identifies Jesus as the chosen one by God, Jesus then says, okay, and I tell you that you're Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades won't overcome it. Why does it seem like some churches aren't overcoming hell? Why aren't we all winning a lot? So this kid goes ice fishing, and he cuts a hole in the ice, and he throws his line in, but he gets nothing. For a long time, just sits there, nothing. But there's this old guy a few feet away, just reeling him in, one after another, one fish after another. Finally, in frustration, the kid says, mister, how are you doing it? What is your secret? We're fishing so close to each other, but I got nothing, and you can't stop catching them. What are you doing? And the old man said, vroom. And the kid said, what? And the man said, rrr, rrr, rrr. And he said, I don't understand. What are you talking? The guy said, rrr, rrr. You got to keep the worms warm. I didn't expect a visceral reaction. I can tell you why some churches thrive while other churches have to shut their doors. The secret is doing the hard work of letting Jesus train you. I mean, he's so willing to. He would love to train you. He lives for that. He died for that. But you got to choose to let him repeatedly, consistently. You got to let him train you. You got to open the door to what he wants you to do, what he teaches you as you go along. Often goes against the grain. It's hard. It seems like every time he says, do this, you go, it's not going to work. But he keeps saying it. So we do what he says. Do you remember when Jesus said to the woman who was sleeping in the wrong bed after her accusers walked away? Do you remember when Jesus straightened up and asked her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? And she said, no one, sir. And he said, then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin. Jesus was totally willing for her to walk away clean from that, but she had to decide to not go back to what she was doing. It was going to be different. It would be hard. She'd have to do life differently. But wouldn't it be great to be part of a congregation where there are lots of people who were doing sexuality like Jesus intends it to be done? Lots of marriages that were lasting long and were vibrant and healthy. I want in on that. Jesus is in favor of that. That would be winning. But for marriages to go that way would require the couples of a church to do the hard work of building good relationships. I've had conversations with people who have said, oh, I know that couple in your church. Yeah, I know them. They're never going to last. And I have always argued in favor of you. All of you, every time. When someone says that, I say, with Jesus' help, they for sure can last. They can be great. But marriages don't always. When we first moved into this building, we had lots of new people. We had people join us who had followed Jesus for a long time. We had people who were just deciding then to follow Jesus. We had people who just wanted to see what the inside of a new church building looked like. We had people everywhere. People we didn't know. Didn't know their names, didn't know their stories, didn't know their connections. Lots of people walking around all the time. One Sunday, the sermon was on confession, how confession really is good for the soul, how AA groups are amazing because you got to admit you have issues or you can't even sit there. How it's important to get your stuff out in public, to tell somebody so that you can start working on it. I said, confession, that kind of honesty could change your life. It could change our congregation if we would confess our sins to each other and pray for each other. Little did I know. During the meet and greet that morning, do you remember meet and greets? Do you remember when we'd take a couple of minutes right in the middle of the hour and we'd just wander around and say hello to each other, shake each other's hands, interact? Somebody asked, when are we going to do that hugs and highs thing again? I said, what? She said, hugs and highs. I like that part. So we were doing hugs and highs one day, and a lady walked up to me. I never met her before. I didn't know who she was. She walked up. She said, I'd like to confess something. And I smiled. Oh, that's so cute. She listened to the sermon. She's referring to the sermon. That's cute. I said, okay, confess away. She said, I'm sleeping with one of the guys in your congregation. I said, pardon me? And she named the guy, a married man in our congregation. And I said, I don't know who you are, but I'm going to go ask him if what you're saying is true. And she said, go ahead. So I did. And he said, yeah, that's true. I said, okay, well, Jesus is really clear on this one. You can follow him or you can keep doing that, but you can't do both. And he said, I know. And surprisingly, he ended that relationship quickly. And more surprisingly, his wife forgave him, and they went on together. The reason lots of churches don't hit the target is because it's hard to do what Jesus says is the right thing to do. Do you think Jesus was kidding around when he said, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it, but small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it? Do you think he was kidding? He wasn't. He was dead serious. It's easy to head towards destruction. That way seems wide open. That way seems like smooth sailing. That's easy to go that way. But it doesn't lead to life. It doesn't lead to good. It doesn't lead to where you want to be. But marriages that last Husbands and wives who do the hard work of growing together, deepening their love as they go, that does lead to good. And the more you do that, the better Jesus looks. So here's to marriages that keep getting better all the time. Who wouldn't want to be a part of church like that? But not everybody's married here. I know that. Not everyone's married. Like Jesus, for instance, was not married. What else are churches supposed to be shooting at? Well, do you remember what the first group who let Jesus show them how to live life looked like? Do you remember what they did? In Acts chapter 2, it says, all the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God, enjoying the favor of all the people, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Wouldn't it be great to be part of a church where people did life together like that? Fred Craddock tells a story about when he was in seminary, and one spring he went out and preached for this little church in Tennessee. And their tradition, the congregation's tradition, was to do baptisms on Easter evening at the West Bar Lake. He said they'd all go down there and people would be immersed in the lake, and then they would all head for the big bonfire that they'd build on the shore. And when everybody was gathered there, there'd be this guy who would introduce the new people. He'd tell their names and where they lived and where they worked. And then the rest of the congregation would gather around all the people who had just been baptized, gather around them in a circle. And then each person in the congregation would say their name, and then they would say something like this. They would say, my name is, and if you ever need somebody to chop wood for you. My name is, and if you ever need somebody to watch your kids. My name is, and if you ever need somebody to repair your house. My name is, and if you ever need someone to sit with the sick. If you ever need someone to do your washing. If you ever need someone just to talk to. And they'd all go around the circle, and everyone in that congregation would offer what they were good at. And Fred Craddock said, then we ate supper, and we had a square dance. And at some time, Percy Miller, with his thumbs in his bibbed overalls, would say, time to go. And everybody would pack up and go home. Craddock said, as he kicked dirt on the fire, Percy Miller looked at Fred and said, Craddock, folks don't ever get any closer than this. Craddock said they had a word to describe all of that. They called it church. And when I heard that, I thought I could go for that. People offering what they've got to each other. Some churches are really good at doing life together. But you know why it's rare? You know why that's rare in America? Because it costs. Sometimes that costs money. It always costs time. And time is so expensive to Americans. We have a bathroom next to where we sleep, which is convenient now that I'm old. I often wander in the dark until I get into the bathroom where I can turn on the light. I do what I need to do, and then I text Jess because it's still day where he is, and then I turn out the light and I wander back to bed. Except one night recently, it didn't turn out. I flipped the switch off and it stayed on. So I flipped the switch like 20 times, nothing, it just stayed on. And I thought, weird, problematic. Electrical, the bathroom light was on. So I slipped out of the bathroom and quickly closed the door behind me and I headed back to bed. But the light shone around the edges of the door like something from Stranger Things. And I thought, no problem, I'll just hurry back to bed and ignore it. But we have a mirror that was almost perfectly positioned for me to still see that glowing doorway. I didn't like it. I quoted 1 John 4:4. Greater is he who's in us than he who's in the world. I hummed Romans 16:19 says, be excellent in what is good, innocent of evil. God of peace will soon crush Satan, crush him underneath your feet. Yeah. I don't know. What do you lean on in scary moments? We had a creepy light around our bathroom door. Made me uneasy. Didn't really sleep much that night. So the next morning early, I called a guy in our congregation. I said, do you do exorcisms? He said, what? Do I do a what? I said, we have an electrical issue. Can you come fix it? He said, sure. And he did. And it took him a couple hours of his life, 3 hours of his life, to sort everything out. But I can now sleep again. So, yeah, I vote for us helping each other, even when it costs. That's what it looks like for a church to hit the target. And if you ever need a guy to deal with demonic lights, Bill is your guy. And if you ever need one more player for some good pickleball, Brad's really good. Dan's very good too. I can also recommend to you photographers, calligraphers, exterminators, numismatists, nurses, chefs, roofers, shovelers, quilters, IT wizards, proofreaders, dog breeders, interceders, mission trip leaders, Maui tour guides, and friends. I can recommend all of those because they're people who make up our congregation. One of the things that we said we aspire to as a group is this: real answers, real friends. Kind of like love God, love people. And our church has a bunch of people who live that way, but it takes time to be involved with each other. There's a price to be paid. It costs. And if you don't want to pay it, okay, but you're not going to hit the target. I preached a sermon series on membership once. I did a sermon series on membership. 4 sermons on the perks of being part. And it was pretty good. I had some good lines. I had some fun stories. It was a very upbeat sermon series. It was when we first opened up for business in this building. There were lots of new people. We were trying to get everyone to get in. I made membership as appealing as I could. I did not cover up the challenging sides of being part of our church, but I definitely emphasized the good for 4 weeks. Jesus emphasized the good too. Jesus said, being part is like buried treasure, finding buried treasure is like discovering a rare jewel. He said, it's like being upgraded to first class when you're not expecting it. It's like being publicly praised by your boss. Jesus said there's definitely an upside to being on his side, but Jesus never downplayed the challenges involved. He said, you will face opposition. People will not like you. You'll have to deny yourself what you desire. You'll lose friends. You'll lose family. Sometimes you'll feel like it's going to kill you if you follow me. It'll cost you. It'll be inconvenient. You'll have to sacrifice stuff. You'll have to sacrifice time. To follow me, you'll have to sacrifice money. Following Jesus impacts finances. Did you know that? Many of you know that. Our church has no outside funding. We don't get money from any other group anywhere else. Whatever we have, it's because people here choose to give some of what God has given to them to Willowbrook. And we talked at last week's congregational meeting about where we are with all that right now. And afterwards, somebody said, I can give more every month. And somebody else said, do we have an online portal for donations? Someone suggested monthly updates so that we know where we are would be good. A fundraising committee, someone suggested asking our friends of our church, not in Victor, to invest in what we're doing. Someone suggested I busk outside of the New York Beer Project Saturday nights. Jokes with John. That'll get us a lot of money, I'm sure. One guy said, I don't even know how to give here. Is there a box? And several people around him said, we'll take you to the box. Charles Spurgeon once preached to a motley crew on a street corner, and when he was done, he passed his hat around to collect an offering. Hat went all the way through the crowd, handed back to him, and it was empty. And some of the roughnecks standing nearby laughed and said, well, what do you think about that offering, preach? And Spurgeon said, with a crowd like this, just happy to get my hat back. There are a lot of jokes made about churches and money, but kingdom work takes money. Do you remember the guy who asked Jesus if he could have a membership form to get in on Jesus' deal? And Jesus said, sure, but first you need to know that the deal is, I get all your money. In Matthew 19, when the young man heard this, he went away sad because he had great wealth. And Jesus said to his disciples, truly I tell you, it's hard for someone who's rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. And he wasn't kidding there either. Lots of people say the church is a non-starter for them because of the money deal. You know why some churches are full of people who love God and each other, who are full of people who love others who are not yet in? It's because that church has decided they'll pay the price. They have decided that what Jesus has done for them, what he offers them, how good he is, that's worth everything they've got. And they throw it all at him because that makes sense. In Romans 12, Paul calls that our reasonable act of worship. And if you never have, you can. You could throw it all at him. You should. You could today. You can decide. that from here on out, what matters to Jesus is what's going to matter to you. That with his help, you could decide that with his guidance, you're going to be what he made you to be. And if you've never decided that ever, today would be a good day to get in. Not just so that you can get in on Willowbrook Christian Church, but so that you can get in on life. And Jesus says, life to the max. But hey, if you've already committed yourself to Jesus, if there was a day, if there was a time, and you chose him, if you had been baptized into the kingdom of light at some point, if you're already in, if you've already said, absolutely, I want to be part of all that, if you're thinking, come on, Walker, I filled out one of those memberships forms already, count me in, please know that this is a decision that you renew day by day, hour by hour, choice by choice. And if you don't pay attention, you might be sliding towards shooting first and circling after. Did you hear that one day the Rain Man met a snowman? And the Rain Man said, you are made out of 3,907,836 snowflakes. No Rain Man movie fans. Okay. You know what the church is made of? People who are going hard after Jesus. And following Jesus is hard. It's good, but it's hard. And if you don't think so, you're probably not. And that doesn't help anybody. So this is not a sermon designed to get everybody to sign up for membership. I mean, I want you all in, but more, I really want you all in. Because that's what you are made for. That's what you long for. That's what will lead to a life worth living. Hard, yes, but so worth it. And really the only choice. In the early 1900s, when Sir Ernest Shackleton was looking for a crew to man the Endurance ship on his journey to the South Pole, Shackleton put this advertisement in London papers. It read, quote, men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition in case of success. 5,000 men applied for the job the first day. They longed for the adventure he offered. And Shackleton's offer is not unlike Jesus's. Hazardous, seemingly bad pay, uncomfortable times of uncertainty, grinding, no promise of getting through alive, but really good if you win. And unlike Shackleton's offer, Jesus promises, in the end, you will win. In fact, Jesus says, and please hear me here, in fact, Jesus says, you will be the champions of the world. So, who wants in? Let's pray.